Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Portland, Oregon.
Sunny Portland, Oregon. Ken, tell us why you're at Oregon Public Radio.
The Wayne Morris Film Festival.
Making a tour of all the great salutes to all the great former senators.
Well, actually, I'm visiting Oregon Public Radio and the lovely people there and the people who give generously to public radio. And that's what we're all about, Ron.
Let's look ahead now to two primaries that are coming up in just a matter of days in Indiana and North Carolina. More delegates at stake when you put those two together than there were in Pennsylvania. A couple of weeks ago, I think people were thinking that Barack Obama had a big lead in North Carolina. He was close in Indiana. If he could win both states, he might be able to knock Hillary Clinton out. Now, 2 weeks later, you hear people saying Hillary's running ahead in Indiana. She's closing the gap in North Carolina. If she can win both states, what does that do to Barack Obama? What's changed, Ken? Two words.
Jeremiah Wright. And you talked about people who give in Oregon. Well, Jeremiah Wright is a gift that keeps on giving, not only to the Republicans, should Barack Obama be the nominee, but perhaps to the Hillary Clinton campaign, who, you know, was all but counted out. But look, she could win Indiana. She's closing the gap in North Carolina. And then comes more favorable terrain in Kentucky and West Virginia. This race is not over.
No, it's not over. And perhaps the last best state that Barack Obama can look to is the state you're in right now. Ken, what are you hearing in Oregon?
Nothing, because I just woke up 5 minutes ago. Oregon, of course, is a mail ballot state. The ballots go out next week. It's mail only.
And so women just do not vote.
And
I live to step on your job.
So look, I mean, if there are 9 more contests, we think that Hillary Clinton wins Puerto Rico and Kentucky and West Virginia.
Indiana. Barack Obama.
Well, I think that's a 50-50 state right now. But what's interesting is that since Pennsylvania, even since Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama still continues to pick up superdelegates at a greater rate than Hillary Clinton. Barron Hill, the congressman from Indiana, David Wu, the congressman from Oregon.
Oh, you're leaving out the big one, Joe Andrew. Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, who has withdrawn as an endorsing Hillary Clinton superdelegate, taking one vote away from her, and endorsed Barack Obama, and that makes him a twofer.
It makes him a Judas.
And I think that role is already taken. That title has already been assigned to Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico. But I think we can at least call him Benedict Arnold. Why is he a Benedict Arnold? Because Joe Andrew was the chairman of the Democratic National Committee under Bill Clinton at the end of Bill Clinton's presidency, and he went to great lengths to defend some of the things that Bill Clinton did late in his presidency, including all those pardons after the 2000 election. So this is a guy who has paid his dues with the Clintons. He's been loyal, and he turns around on a day like this, in a week like this, with the Jeremiah Wright controversy raging, and he switches to Barack Obama.
I think it comes at a time when Barack Obama desperately needs people like that. I think the feeling, Claire McCaskill said something this week that was pretty interesting.
Senator from Missouri, Democrat, Obama supporter.
Right, a Sagittarius. No, I don't even know if she's a Sagittarius. But anyway,
she's approaching the green now. He's going to putt from the skirt of the green. I think he's going to have a pretty good line on the putt.
She said it's our feeling that of among the 80 or so superdelegates from Congress who have not formally declared yet, she feels that most of them have actually in their minds know who they wanted back, and they just want Barack Obama to do something positive for them to come out. I think perhaps Barack Obama had a lot of superdelegates in his hip pocket had he done better in Pennsylvania on April 22nd than he did.
There's no question there would have been a big, big surge to him had he been able to bring off an upset in Pennsylvania. And some of these people
close, or run close.
Or even run close, which would have been, in a sense, a big upset. And if he could have won North Carolina, Indiana on May 6th, not saying that that's not possible, but looking much less likely for him to win both, if he were able to do that, a lot of those people were planning to pop out of the back pocket at that particular moment. But instead, they're needing to use them this week. They needed to bring out a Jeff Bingaman, the senator from New Mexico. They needed to bring out somebody like a member of the Democratic National Committee from Texas, John Patrick, also a 31-year member of the United Steelworkers, somebody who speaks for blue-collar workers, and bring him out in the midst of the Jeremiah Wright controversy to also endorse Barack Obama and try to show that he has some momentum in the midst of this difficult hour.
Look, Jeremiah Wright is not going to go away, and a lot of Hillary people and Republicans say that this is fair game for the poll. I spoke to Ron Walters, an expert on black-white relationships and black-white politics, and he thinks that the fact that it's come out now means it won't be an issue in the fall. all, I disagree. I think if there's no way, just as Willie Horton, just as swift voting, just as everything else you could throw at a candidate happens, just like the Democrats will throw John Hagee at McCain, I suspect that if Barack Obama were the nominee, obviously Jeremiah Wright is an issue. But I think there was something very interesting to watch Barack Obama this week, because he was clearly anguished. He thought or hoped, or perhaps misguidedly hoped, that his speech in Philadelphia back in March on race relations was going to end the conversation, and obviously it did not.
There are comparisons being made here to that moment in the 1992 campaign when Bill Clinton stepped out and denounced a particular rap video by Sister Souljah. And he used this opportunity to denounce a certain kind of attitude within the black community and to distance himself, if you will, from Jesse Jackson, who was kind of an irritant around the edges of the Bill Clinton candidacy in 1992, and was perceived as sending a message to white voters in the Democratic Party that he was not going to be beholden to any particular interest within the party. Is Barack Obama now having a kind of Sister Souljah moment of his own?
It felt like in 1992, when Bill Clinton had that Sister Souljah moment, it was more politics. It was more tactics. This with Barack Obama seemed to be more personal. I think he would have done anything he could to make it go away. But when Jeremiah Wright had his trifecta with Bill Moyers, the NAACP, and then the National Press Club,
all three appearances in 4 days.
Right. There was a lot of concern among superdelegates saying, you've got to get a handle on this. You can't let it go on like this. And I think there was a tremendous anguish in Barack Obama's voice, if not his face and his heart, having to denounce somebody that he wished it didn't go as far as it did.
I want to also, though, throw in this parenthetical thought. This is not all about Jeremiah Wright. There is also a surge here in the Hillary Clinton campaign. In her appeal to voters, she has found a vein to mine, and it's clearly working for her. And let me cite some more evidence besides what we've already talked about. Not only is she rising in Indiana and North Carolina yet to vote next week, but she's also rising in several critical states where John McCain, the presumptive Republican nominee, is campaigning this very week. And that's Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. A new Quinnipiac poll has come out on all three states showing Hillary Clinton beating John McCain by 8 points in Florida, by 10 points in Ohio. Ohio, now, Ken, a really crucial state that the Republicans must have.
It's not a red state and not a blue state. It's a silver state.
A silver state.
Yes. Do you know the Ohio Silvers?
I had to ask. Pennsylvania, yes. Clinton is at 51%. McCain, 37%, a 14-point lead for Clinton over McCain in Pennsylvania. If ever you wanted to make the blue-collar voter Reagan Democratic argument for Hillary Clinton, these numbers are perfect for her.
You do know and you do remember in 1988 when Michael Dukakis left the Atlantic Convention with a 17-point lead over George H.W. Bush. Obviously, there's much more attention to put on the Democrats and the Republicans. I really think that polls in May, about a November general election 6 months away, is a bit silly, but it does show that once upon a time Hillary was seen as the weaker Democratic candidate. But here's one more thing that we should also remember. The last Democratic candidate to win a majority of the white vote was Lyndon Johnson in 1964. So we could talk about how well that Hillary Clinton is doing with white voters vis-a-vis Barack Obama, but ultimately it's questionable whether either one can pull off that kind of magic in November.
And speaking now just to the relationship between Clinton and Obama, many polls coming out in the middle of the week from NBC, Wall Street Journal, CBS, New York Times, also from the Pew Research Center, run by Andy Cohut. Andy Cohut has a new poll out. All three of these polls are showing that Hillary Clinton has closed the gap or pulled slightly ahead of Barack Obama among Democrats nationwide, a critical factor in her making her case that she's still the more electable candidate, even if he has more pledged delegates, and even if he winds up completely eliminating her lead among superdelegates, which he's close to doing.
That it puts this tremendous dilemma on the Democratic Party if he is fading at the most inopportune time for him. If his lead among the delegates and perhaps even his increasing pickups in superdelegates, if that's what's going to ultimately put him over the top and he is a fatally flawed candidate, if he is, and it's a question whether he is or not, but then that puts the Democrats in this unbelievable bind. You know, it's so funny. We thought that especially in 2008, with the moving up of all the primaries into January and February, that this race would be over before you know it, and there may be a voter—what's the word I want?
Backlash.
The voter's remorse.
Backlash.
Voter's remorse. Okay. The fact is that there is an opportunity, theoretically, for the superdelegates to take a look at what's going on and wondering whether the person with the lead may be the weaker candidate. Now, I'm still not convinced that Hillary Clinton can win in November. I think she still has done a lot of polarizing things. I think that, you know, if the momentum starts to move towards her, as it did in 2007, then maybe once again voters will say, no, is Hillary Clinton the one we want? But right now, it seems to be in her direction and away from Barack Obama.
One issue on which John McCain and Hillary Clinton agree, and it's not about Barack Obama, and that is that gas taxes should be suspended between Memorial Day and Labor Day this summer to give motorists a break. What say you, Ken?
Well, you know, when John McCain suggested that a while ago, I think the feeling among everybody was that it was a gimmick, that it ultimately could even lead to increased gasoline prices, and the Democrats would see through it. And here we have Hillary Clinton perhaps pandering, perhaps trying to do the same kind of thing. I mean, once again, Hillary Clinton lines up with John McCain on an issue and against Barack Obama. I think Barack Obama is right economically. I'm not sure if he's right politically, and I guess perhaps that's what it's all about.
How much is the gasoline tax per gallon?
Is it 18 cents, I believe?
Yes, it's 18 cents per gallon. It is not 18% of the total cost at the pump. In other words, it's only 18 cents. It's not getting any bigger as the gasoline price goes up. This issue comes up in the same week when yet another oil company announces yet another round of record profits. But for a very long time, there's been a very lively argument in the American political marketplace, with Republicans saying taxes make your gallon of gasoline highly expensive. Look at all the state taxes and the local taxes and the federal taxes. When you put all that in there, that's why your gallon of gas costs so much. And right now, I think John McCain's trying to tap into the residual belief of many Americans that they're paying as much in taxes as they are to the gas station or to the oil company. And Hillary Clinton's jumping right on that bandwagon. One other date to put on people's calendars, and I know our podcast listener has a calendar for these things. At the very end of the month, on May 31st, Howard Dean is calling a meeting of the Rules Committee. Well, actually, the co-chairs of the Rules Committee are calling the meeting. This is the Rules Committee of the Democratic National Committee, the folks who are going to decide what goes down with Michigan and Florida. Ken, give us a prediction now. How are they going to work all that out?
Well, there's a new possible solution that's come out by Carl Levin, Debbie Dingell, other Democratic leaders, and Mark Brewer, the Democratic state chairman in Michigan. And they propose, here's the thing. Hillary Clinton, when they moved up the Michigan primary to January 15th, Hillary Clinton won it, although nobody campaigned in it. Barack Obama was not on the ballot. Hillary Clinton, of course, when she says that she has won the most votes, she's obviously counting Michigan and Florida. She feels she should get the most delegates. Barack Obama says, no, it should be a 50-50 split, since it really doesn't really matter because the DNC sanctioned the states. This new proposal by Levin, Dingell, Brewer, and others.
Carolyn Fitzpatrick.
Said that it should be divided. Hillary Clinton should get 69 delegates, Barack Obama 59 delegates, which is a compromise from not as much as Hillary wanted, not as much as Barack Obama wanted, but it's a compromise. It may be something to work on.
It's maybe a majority, but it's not what you'd call a lion's share. I would think that the Clinton people would be rather disappointed in that as a payoff and disappointed to see some of their supporters in the state signing off on it. But it is a ticket to Denver for the entire Michigan delegation. They go with their heads held high, smiles on their faces, and nobody hating on them. That would be great from the standpoint of everybody in Michigan. What about Florida? How do we resolve that one?
Well, nothing is. There have been no new proposals on Florida. Perhaps that they may not be anything until the DNC meets on May 31st.
Okay, but that's enough about the horse race, huh, Ken? I mean, that's enough about the process and the mechanics that the listener probably doesn't really want to get into. Let's get back to the substance, the real substance of the campaign, the real substance of what America cares about in this particular race.
Did somebody just cut off my mic?
No, they were a little slow in doing that. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can, if you like, follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Portland, Oregon.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.